I'm going to talk first and then turn it over to others who have something to say. That is to say, Steve and John Clark and Dan and maybe others might do it. We were hoping to do this through the switching, but we can't do it that way. So people who are going to talk about what they have to show us about how they handle census data will need to come up here and replace me right here at this table. So we'll just do that. It won't take but a second to do it, I think. But unfortunately, we can't do the switching as we like to do it. So, talking about how we do census tags and census data in general, I want to say a couple of things about my own approach. Everybody has their own approach. I'm here to not only tell you what I do, but to listen to what you do and to hear any comments you might have about my own approach. I see that the census data is really the mother lode of family history research. And I find that the census data is something I rely on so heavily. And it's amazing to me how much I've learned from revisiting census pages that I have thought I had completely mined, and then I find something else in there that I hadn't noticed or hadn't paid proper attention to. And so I believe it's the most important source of data that we have. At the same time, I find it very intimidating because I'm afraid to, first of all, I'm afraid to get too off into the weeds because there's so much, and you see somebody say, oh, that person's interesting, I wonder if I can find that person in the previous or later censuses, and then I go out and then it's somebody else, and somebody else that goes far beyond what I'm really, really interested in, or supposed to be interested in. So that's one of the dangers that I find in working with census data. And another is that I'm afraid that the way I handle it is not the way I'm going to want to handle the other, and you really want to be consistent in this thing, and so there's just too much out there to deal with, and that's also a big frustration for me. So what I have decided to do is just focus primarily on my direct ancestors. There are lots and lots of others out there, but I feel that if they're not my direct ancestors, then I can handle them some other way. And when I get to my website, I know I'm going to have to be consistent and bring all those people in. I can't just have tags that have to say this and that about them. I really have to be documenting them as carefully as I document my ancestors, but there's only so much you can do. So for what I do is when I find a census record in generally in Ancestry, sometimes in some other place, I do five things. The first thing is I make an image that I can keep in my exhibits folder or my picture folder in my regular computer system. That's the first thing. The second thing is I print out a hard copy of it, and I keep hard copies of all of those pages, census pages, in separate clear folders, which I separate by state or province. The third thing is I go into my Word documents and I type out the basic information that I have found in the census record using a modified version of what's available through Evidence Explained with the Sean Mills there. The fourth thing is make a TMG source for that particular census record based on the head of household from that year, and I'm going to show you these things. Then I make a tag for that particular census record that I found. And the sixth thing I do, sometimes before the tag, but generally after I've done the tag, is I make an image of that record in the exhibits log for the person who I have named, or the person who is the head of household in that record, and then I make a copy of the image for every other ancestor or family member in that case who is named in the census record. So in all, every single person, for each person, I have the image in the image log. Okay. So having done that, I have basically the stuff that I need in my TMG. And as you can see, I've got the latest version of TMG. I have 133 separate sources for my direct ancestors in my system right now. And those are in the federal censuses, state censuses in a few cases, and a few Canadian censuses, 133. Okay, let me show you how I do this. So let's start with the tags. And I'll start with I'll show you the tag type list. Now, I know some of you have different census tags, and I just have the one. I have the census tag here. I don't have a 1880 census tag or any other census tag, but just one kind of everything is a census tag. I'm not a professional genealogist, and I'm a rank amateur, as all of you who know me. And test. Okay, because it's TMG8 and I have a color, so I've made it a yellow. It doesn't look very yellow there, but I have a yellow. So that's there for that. And those census tags where my person, Aquila Fletcher Molden, my sainted great-grandfather, who lived at 1305 Rhode Island Avenue, right by Logan Square, a half a block away from the Studio Theater as it is today. He's in there as a witness in some cases, and when he's a witness, he's there in green, because I have made green the favorite color for witness events in TMG. So you'll notice on my system I have different colors. I'll just mention that the brown is for direct ancestors, and then over on the side you can see, just barely see, the associates, and some are red indicating their women, and some are blue indicating their men.
So you have two accents going at once?
I have four or five accents. On here you see five different accents. You have brown, blue, red, yellow, and green. Right. Okay, so here's what I would have for Aquila Molden in the 1880 census. And I just point out that in the 1880 census, you see that I have made both Aquila and his wife principals. I guess I've been brainwashed to think that the wife is just as important as the man, not necessarily in terms of how they're recorded in the census data, because obviously it's the man who is the head of household if there's unless he's deceased. I mean, some women are heads of households, but I think that for my purposes, having them vote as principals makes sense. And the citation is to the 1880 U.S. Census and the Molden A.F. Aquila Fletcher HHLD with household. That's what my citation is to. You'll notice that I have nothing in the memo field. Generally, I don't put anything in the memo field for them, but sometimes if he's a reverend or something, I might say noted as a reverend in the census, or that he had so much acreage or something I find interesting in the census that I don't feel is worth a separate tag. So that's the way I do that. And then the sentence is a pretty simple sentence. If I hit the sentence there, it is that Aquila Fletcher and Elizabeth Drusilla Raymond appeared on the census of 1 June 1880 at 1305 Rhode Island Avenue with these other people in the household. That's just, I've just modified the default sentence very, very slightly to do that. So that's how I handle that part. Let me show you what I do with somebody who is not a direct ancestor. And here's Richard Brookings, who is the brother of my direct ancestor. And yes, that is the Brookings Institution, Brookings family, that I'm kind of connected to. Pleased to say so. Okay, so here we have Richard Brookings. He's just one of those ancestors, and I want to show you how I handle the 1880 census for him. Oops, it's not the 1880 census. I want to show you the 1840 census. Okay, so in this case, I just throw a lot of stuff in the memo. As you can see, there is no citation, we've got the witnesses of their children, and then I have some comments in here about what I think I know about this particular person. So that's the way I handle that. When I go to a more sophisticated presentation of all that, I always go in and show the source and so on. But to me, the census sources are so easy to get that I don't want to waste time sort of writing in all the details about them and having them do what I consider to be cluttering up the material that I have here. Okay, let's go and look at the sources that I have. And first of all, the source type. If I go over to the source type list and go down to tools, and you go down and look at what we have for censuses. Now, generally, we see the census state, census federal film, the federal film. But I feel that since I get all of my data from online sources, that I ought to use the system that I think John Clark introduced us to, and that is to use something that's digital, that refers to the ancestry or wherever we got it from. So I made copies of the federal film that I used for both the Canada census online, the federal online, and the state online. And so that's what I have to show you, the federal. So if you look at the federal, it has a rather complicated full footnote, which is the one that John Clark introduced us to. And it's, if I show you the film, which this is the source that we had. The source was this. It's much less detailed, but I've bought into the John Clark approach to this, which has a longer version. Okay.
Okay.
And we could call it the Elizabeth Shawn Mills, but I think you've improved on it though a little bit. Okay.
As interpreted by
Clark. I think you did. Okay. So thank you. Okay. Now, this is going to be something that will be quite different from other people. Now, when we go to the master source list up here in tools, we go right up to the top, because you'll see that I've got things arranged in a way that is quite different from some other people. And that is, I've got it organized by date, census date, type of census, and then the last name of the head of household in there. So, in other words, I have a different source, as I said earlier, for each person. And some may like that, and some may not like that so much. But that's the way I do it. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to take you to this place.
It is obviously
here. Well, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, George Splitter, she's a lumper.
Some people are lumpers, yeah. I'm a splitter, yeah. I'm a splitter in... Yeah, right. This is really splitting. Okay. So as you can see here, for one thing, in these dates I want to show you. I've got a Canada census in here, and I've got Iowa and Nebraska in here too. So that's the way I organize it, and I know a lot of people like to just say it's the 1880 census is the source, and then do it a different way. But this makes me more comfortable. I'm more comfortable with this. Okay, now we take our sainted ancestor, Aquila Fletcher Molden, and here he is. I'll show you how I do that. Here's the source definition screen for Aquila Fletcher Molden. So it's got these different elements, and it's the Elizabeth Shawn Mills John Clark version of it. You see the different. You can see pretty clearly the way I've got it laid out. Okay, when you go to the output form, you go over and here it's laid out as you saw it earlier in the source type list, and you can see that when you want to go to the preview of the sentences that you will get with all this information about the quote, then this is the way it works out. And it works fine. This is the main okay. And or if you the same goes for the short footnote preview and for the bibliography footnote. So I'm pretty satisfied with that. Now I'll show you what do I do with the supplemental. The supplemental, because I don't trust this so much, and I just want to be double sure that I've got everything included, I go to supplemental And here is the entry that I have made in my Word document. So I will copy that whole works over from the Word document into here. So it's got, and as you can see, in there I put a lot of stuff in there. Sometimes I put in more details about ages and other matter. And I try to do that now. Or anything else. I should note that I have, although I will include in my database all the people who are mentioned in here, I don't include boarders or servants in my database per se. I might do it in some cases of sort of long-term beloved household help or whatever, I would do it. But generally for a boarder, I wouldn't. Or if they're staying in a boarding house, I definitely wouldn't put all the other people in the boarding house in there. Okay, for attachments, I put nothing. And the reason I do that is that it's a lot of trouble that I don't need. Basically, I don't think I need it because census data is so available to us nowadays that I don't think that anybody who wants to look at my data has a serious interest. My data would need to know what repository contains the census data that I'm referring to. So that's my, I don't know, maybe kind of anarchic, anti-proper form approach to it, but that's the way I handle my census data. So, any questions? Yes, sir.
Paul, what do you do when you look, you can't find someone in a census? You know that they were from a certain town because they're two censuses, a little census that you can't find them. How do you document what you look for? Where are you looking
and
so forth?
I have in a few cases just made a tag and say for the census of that year and just say no census record found. That's what it is. Yeah. Or sometimes I'll make one and say no census record found for 1850 or 1860, but I know they passed away in 1868. You know, just make a tag or enough, put a little memo in. Yeah. Any other?
Well, I'll comment that I'm starting to use the research log to capture more negative search information.
Right.
And so in that case, I would put in the research log for a particular person, for a ancestry database that I was searching that I did not find that person in that data that I was looking for. And just I think Paul's saying he has like a Word document where he keeps his working information. I'm convincing myself and trying to figure out how to make it effective using the research log so that it's all there.
Right.
And then I can very easily go back and look and see, did I look for this guy and what are my notes about why he's not in here as a census record?
Have you looked at the research
board? Yeah. You put in whatever you want to remind yourself of the criteria that you looked for previously. Just put that in the notes in the research log. You could put it in a Word document or a sticky set of computer. I'm trying to get in and use the research log now so we're making information as well as other data.
Right, that makes more sense. Well, I tend to put stuff in my tags saying this needs this or I need to look at this, which is not a good idea if you're going to share this widely, but when I get to that particular image on that person, it reminds me, and I do that just kind of a to-do list there. You're not supposed to put your to-do list in your tag on the person view, but that's
actually,
what I do.
I have a role for for the census tag, and I put not found, but I think that I can combine it with yours, so I know that not found means go look in the research logs for where I documented what I did to not find it.
That's good. Yes?
Can't you use the research log, too, to identify a place, like if you're going to Altoona, Pennsylvania,
yes.
you sort of have all
of it?
Yeah, I think that's what it's usually used.
The research log, probably when you think about it, is more of a to-do list, but it can also become a have-already-done list or a nature of recording information so that 6 months or a couple of years from now, you have a place to look it up. You can do it in an external document and keep it in your head. I'm slowly moving over to trying to capture that in the research log.
Those are good comments. Well, I don't know where we're going to go from here, but I think that the next person up would be Steve Lewick, and he's going to have to come up and replace me here. Before we, sure, come on up. I mean, as you're coming up, let me just say before I leave the stage that this kind of discussion, I think, is really valuable to me. And I think that when there are other topics where it doesn't take a lot of expertise, it doesn't take a lot of expertise to come up and show you. It just takes a little bit of nerve to show the amateur capabilities approaches that somebody takes and just say, hey, look, here's how I'm doing. Maybe you've got a better idea, or let's all share this sort of thing. On roles or any other thing like that, if you're looking for program ideas for the coming months, think of things that where we can share like this. And
you were going to say something? Oh, I would say you're going to turn that off before.
Oh, yeah.
Paul, on the side of your reading, I think that you can get a panel or a chance to see
yes. Yeah.
But like your teach, what do you have to tie your survey there on your census? How do you like something
about? Oh, that's the state, that's the location, DC, MD.
Well, like the first one you have TJ.
That's household. TJ Williams household in Iowa. Because there was only room to do that. Yeah, that's the way.
Okay, I can't quite.
Okay. All right. Sure. Okay. Steve, if you can.
I do things similar to Paul. I was a splitter when I first started doing censuses and the sources, but then I guess I was reading Perry Regal's book and through other meetings here, you know, and then I only split it into, let me get out of this part here, into the years, you know, like my tag here. You know, so each separate has a 1870, 1860, whatever, and so forth. And it's similar to Paul in terms of the sources. When I first started out, I didn't know. I mean, each, you know, entry I found, I put it, you know, the same for each person had a source. But then I figured out an easier way to capture it was just have one source for that year. And I did split it online, or if I had sound record, you know, directly, I don't know. Initiated it that way. But the one thing I just wanted to share more, since it's very similar to Paul, is the how I did sentences, because I think the initial, let me go to the PowerPoint here, I found Terry Regal online has a nice full screen here. Oops, I went back on the slide. So this is online. I don't know if anyone's seen his site, but he has much more detail that's in the book, you know, the book we went through. And this just shows an example here where I put the, you know, for my census tags, I have them divided by the years. And the one thing I wanted to capture, which didn't find a way with. You know, the more non-standard relationships, because you always put as a witness, you know, the children, and they'll show up in their sentence. And but the one thing that wouldn't necessarily show up would be the, if you were printing out a narrative report, would be the, you know, the children were listed in the census of that person. So I think this is how Terry does it. And you, like the way, like I said, this is for 1880, I guess there's a way you can actually capture and just put the year there. And then I think there's a study that
there is a
year,
variable for year.
Or a variable for year. I didn't know that. So you could do that and have one for all the senses. So what he, how he does it is for the non-standing ones, he puts it as the sentence actually in the memo, which is kind of a, I don't know if you could do that, but it does work. And so, for example, the sentence here has a standard, you know, the principal. And then in this case, I had, he created a role. If you want their daughter here, you can then create a role for the daughter with parents. Or you could do the same thing for a son, you know, with parents too. And the male sentence would be, you know, their son here with them on this sentence. And then M2 is for these other members of the household who are not standard. In this case, I was just doing an other, but you could specify whether it could be a sub, you know, son-in-law or mother-in-law or something, if you wanted to sort of identify them and then have the sentence. So the example, I think I have an example here, and down here is sort of why you might want to do this, rather than just typing it in the, you could type this all in the memo, but in case the name changes or information changes, this would automatically update. Plus, in, you said in the second site, then they'll appear as sort of a hyperlink with the one, if you did it the other, you know, just by typing the name in. And it's just showing more, a little more detail in the things you can put in a sentence. But you kind of forget these as you're not thinking about it. You can change these details rather than just putting L. You can, you know, specify, you know, down to the street if you want by putting LD, you know, the city, the county. So you can leave these out or change whatever you, how you'd like the output to look in the sentence. And then this is showing the sentence in the, we're just capturing the, as I said, using the M2. I guess you could, you know, put this M1, there's no reason. Just if you want to, if you're using it for something, other information, you could use just the M1 or just the M for capturing the sentence data. So this was the, where I found this one here. What the sentence looks like for the principles, and then this is how the output looks for the sentence. You know, I was looking at what changes. You probably don't want to repeat this again. You could change the sentence in the you know, in the memo here, so you wouldn't necessarily be redundant repeating it. This next sentence is the 1880, and you might also put their relationship too. Whoops, there's this, you know, ahead. So, this just shows some of, this is from Terry's learning site, you know, talking about how he set this up. For example, if you want to, you know, specify, you know, the children in the sentence, this is one of these roles you would create, one son and one daughter. You know, this is an outset. And then you could do it for the children in terms of the witnesses. This is how you could specify. And if you want, if you just go to that site, you know, you can fool around with it and, you know, create any role you would like in that. And this is just sort of a summary of different, you know, if you want only the first name to appear, you can change the roles to, you know, R plus would be the full name or the given name, just so your output would look, you know, you can can be controlled by a simple syntax you use. And again, these are some of the roles I created. I probably might, just go back and change some of these as you learn as you go along and make it simple. And the different, because, back in the 1800s, you had a lot of family members living together and multiple relatives or cousins or second cousins and parents. So this is one way to capture those. If you have multiple family members in the same census, you can often have, five or more, non-nuclear family living in the household. I think this is another example. In this case, actually just as it for 1900, there was a nephew living, with the uncle, and started to sort of capture the role or created a role for the. This would be the sentence for the uncle, and then if you look at this, would be the sentence for the witness in this case would be the nephew. And he's living with, and so it's a was listening to his uncle. So this is sort of a maybe a little more advanced way to capture some of the information in an output, say second sight or something. So I think that's it for my sort of take on the census. Anyone has questions?
How do you handle your sources?
Excuse me?
Your sources.
Oh, how do I cite them? Yes, let me go back to
your master sources?
Yeah. So they said they did change. So if I go to the top, this is when I first started with the sources. So I do have the online, I did add that later. And then, early on I had to each person, so I'd have to go back and find where I've cited these and filter them and probably, take them out and change the source to the more common one.
And how do you handle it internally if it's 1850 census, for example, U.S. Census?
Uh-huh.
How do you do the individual households?
Then I would just cite the. Oh, let me see. I guess this is how I would show that. So this is just a general one. I actually put it in the comment. I mean, that's a comment. When you do the citation, citation detail. Yeah, I just put it in there. I guess I can open one actually from where I've done it. I don't know what I did in this one, but So I put it here, like the film number, the page, and that. And I do the same for the online. I just copy the, in Ancestry, it gives you all the information there. Though I think when the output, you probably end up with blanks because I haven't really figured out exactly how to, when you go to the source, these are left blank, like the film is still in the one. I guess you can take those out, how that output would look. But that's sort of how I handle the.
Yeah, I think this is. Basically, the lumper approach.
Yes. I guess I'm halfway between lumper and quarter. So, any other questions?
Yeah. I'm interested because I know that I'm going to have to become a lumper.
Okay, I'm going to present several ideas that are a little bit different than what Paul had, and I'll try to explain why. And I guess this goes to personal preference. Also, about 2.5 years ago, I did a presentation on, at this RUG meeting, presentation on census. And I don't know how much I've changed my mind since then. But I know several areas. I know several areas that I have kind of
switching how I want to do it. I did this presentation on census a couple of years ago in preparation for doing a major project. I thought I was going to sit down and just start with my TMG database, and every person I should find in the census, I was going to go find them in the census and make sure all of my census data was done consistently as it was applied in the TMG. I kind of started on that, but that was about the time word came out about TMG 8, and there was discussion about roles in TMG 8, and for some reason I'm just not picking up, Paul.
Anybody?
Really?
It's not coming.
Is it a Dell?
Yeah. Oh, I just hit the button. It's not plugged in very well.
Hit the button.
Mine has non-digital, non-VGA output for the new types of demos, that, which I found out earlier. Anyway, I kind of put that project aside, and I will be redoing that here in a couple of, well, 3 or 4 weeks. I'm going to Germany in April, get some data. As soon as I digest that data, I'm going to come back and resume my census project. So I'm going to probably, I would say, start over in making some decisions about how I want to do census data. But I don't think I'm going to be radically different from what I have right here. Although in the question of splitter versus lumper, on the census record, I'm going to probably go back to the splitter approach pretty close to what Paul had. And the reason for that is when you think about the census, all of the organization and the information comes down to an image that you see on your screen. And the organization is very important. State, county, precinct, all that stuff, page number. But when we think about the data, we don't think about the data anywhere else in the census, I don't, other than what I see right here on that page. And when I come down, I start to think about that page and what's on that page and really the lines that I'm thinking about. I think about that as being a very discrete record of information, almost like a draft card might be considered a discrete record. So it's kind of the way you think about it, and I've kind of tuned my thinking now that I want to go into the census records in a splitter manner, and then where Paul had his abbreviations. Remember, abbreviations is kind of like your tabs that you put on a notebook or on a file. It's the information inside the notebook or inside the file folder that's important. The tab just helps you find it, and that's what the abbreviation is, and however you wish to abbreviate it. When I did the presentation 2.5 years ago, whatever, I went back, and one of the points I like to make is I think you will get better results out of your research and documentation if you do go back and study the underlying definitions of the information that you're dealing with, and kind of think about that as you look at that information. It helps you understand why the information was captured, something about how it was captured, etc. And that may help you think of a way to use that information more accurately, more correctly, or to extrapolate from that information better for your approach. I remembered I had a chart here just very quickly. Why do we do a census? I don't know if it's related to what they did in England, but we were all English before the Revolution. So they probably, there were a lot of lawyers, and there were lawyers in the English system who then became the founding fathers in the U.S. and wrote the Constitution. But the purpose of the census was to enumerate the people that were in the country. And the key there is enumeration. So when you look at early census, everybody but the head of the household is a number. And you don't know name, rank, serial number, anything about that person. And let's see here. You know, its primary purpose was to count the people so they could apportion the representatives. Also, to read the history of the Constitution, there was a pretty good sized debt. Right now, that's 1 cent.
relative to a dollar on what we have for current debt, but they were going to allocate the debt back to the states based on population. And that's where the slave fraction came in real importantly, not so much because they were going to vote, because we know they weren't going to vote, but how much of the federal debt was going to get allocated to a state based upon the existence of slaves in that state. Over time, we've added all kinds of socioeconomic data to the census. So if you look longitudinally in census from 1790 to 1930, you've really seen a lot of differences. You know, how much farmland you had, when did you get married, when did you come to the United States, etc. And then now, the federal census is the basis for distributing well over $300 billion, according to formulas. The Congress doesn't really vote on those formulas every year. It's the census data goes into formulas, and then that gets results in the various grant and other checks that go from the federal government to state and, in some cases, local government. So the census has a fairly significant role in the United States, and it exists to support those roles, not to support genealogists, thank you, us. How many folks have signed up to index the 1940 census? Yeah, right now, with the indexers who signed up, if they index the 1940 census starting in April 12th, I think is the date, they expect it will take 9 months to get total index. And of course, if they have more indexers, it will take less time. That's going to be very important.
That's a family search.
That's family search, yeah.
Yeah, there was something in that I took a session online. To use family search, or if you go to index family search, not ancestry, family search can be free.
Yeah. Okay, I had this whole one. Had this up, and then I had probably made the mistake of rebooting when I didn't need to. I apologize. I had to reboot to get the display working, and it turns out it was actually just unplugged in the back, and it will never work that way. What I want to show you, one other point I want to make, and then I'll get into the actual TMG issue, is okay. I can't get this to expand, so use your great vision. But remember, when you look at a census record, it will identify a household and a head of household, and this in case is Annie Fugate is the head of household. You can barely see that upper left hand corner, but you know, the sample database of real people, and if you really look at the census, you can find most of them. And here Frank Alexander is living with his daughter, Annie Fugate, and she has several children. When you go through and again look at what were they capturing in the census, it may help you think about the way you want to organize your data. And I'll illustrate this as again at TMG. But in this census record, Annie Fugate is the head of household, even though she's listed as married. And I forget why her husband is not there. She's married, but the husband is not there in the household at that time. And her father, who's living with them, is not listed as head of household. She is. So that implies some things, but remember that only implies information about why, what, where, all of that. So be careful when you start taking what may be suggested or implied by the census and start creating facts and then allocating those facts coming from the census. Now, you may have assumptions that you're documenting. And then in your assumption, you'll say, you know, because of this that I find in the census, I'm deciding that this over here is a fact. But don't say that the census said that if you really are kind of putting in some sort of assumption that you're doing. The third or fourth record on here is another thing that I make kind of an important point about. You can't really read it, but a family household has a head of household who's a male. and then the next person that's listed is a female who's listed as wife. So clearly, the census data, which is there to count people, not to tell you about marriage. So this would be a fairly low surety information, but nonetheless a fact about the husband-wife relationship. You could go fairly go in and say that this man and this woman are married, because the census says they're married. They are head of household and wife. The next entry in there is daughter. Okay, if you're going to cite the census, remember that it said the female is the daughter of the head of the household. It does not say she's the daughter of the wife of the head of the household. So again, understand what the census is telling you and think about how you want to use that. Now, is the third person on there that's listed as the daughter probably the daughter of the wife? Probably, yes. But remember, it didn't say that, and this may be a second wife. And if you say a mother-daughter relationship on the basis of census, you may be creating now erroneous information in your database that's going to cause you and other people to document and source things incorrectly. And I think the DAR does not accept those inferred relationships as relationships to show, you know, a lineage. So, key point there about studying the underlying data about the census before you start documenting. And then if you want to use that data a little bit differently, if you want to infer things, make sure you're documenting those as assumptions on your part, attributable or derived from the census, but not not a direct fact based on the census. Now, there are a couple of things that I do differently than Paul, and I wanted to just point those out. I apologize that I had all these screens up and then had to reboot. Fortune is coming back to that person. Also, my mouse decided it did not want to work today. I think the battery is a little low, so I'm having to use the touchpad. It's not my favorite. I do the census here. Let's see. I had unique tags for the census 19, each of the census years, 1900, 1910, 1920, 1930. I went out over and looked at something and said, John, you've got to go update your database. I know where it is. How many of you made a copy of your 2010 census form? I did, and I actually have a copy of my 2000 census form. Wish I had the 1990 and 1980, but wasn't thinking about genealogy back then. So I had not put them in. That's where I was going to show you, and I said, oh, wait, I don't have it in my database. I need to go do that. So I had that's original data. I made a copy of the form before I made it. And it will be 72 years before anybody else can see that data. Anyway, in this case of my grandmother, Betty Ward Hudson, she was born in 1891, and then I found her in the 1900, 1910, 1920, 1930 census, and sometime in the next year I'll find her in the 1940 census when it's available online. I put in a different census tag for each of those years, because I wanted to create sentences that were specific or unique to that census year. Just so when I do a narrative report, I don't end up with five or six or seven sentences about somebody being found in the census where those sentences are all the same other than the date. So I have that they were found in the 13th census of the United States enumerated on this date. Or I have found that they were in the 14th census or something like that. So I decided to go with a tag for each census year so I could be a little more fine-tuned with some different sentences. Really, it adds no more specific data, but that allowed me to put in these different sentences tag by tag.
Also, when I bring up someone in the person view, as you can see here, the census tags, in this case, are kind of flagged with yellow text on a gray background. May not be the best way, but when I was getting ready for a big effort, which could have taken me 3 to 6 months, I think, to go through my database and find everybody and get them fully tagged, you know, fully using every tag, every role, every piece of information I could extract out of Ancestry. I was getting ready to do that, and I kind of got diverted and intentionally diverted waiting for TMGA. But what I'm thinking about doing here is making sure that when I bring up a person view, that it, you know, very easily is I can very easily look at the birth date. I may go annotate that in special cover color, and then each of the tags, so I can see the tags for the census records. Obviously, you have to remember there's virtually no one going to have an 1890 census record, and then for now there are no 1940 census records to be in there. But the idea would be so that when I looked at this, it kind of visually jumps out at me which census records I've already gotten for that person, whether they're the primary person or the witness person. It's going to be a little easier for me to see that I catch that person in a census record. Now, obviously, if I do a full screen of all of my people who are living in the United States, trying to find them, I'm going to have to look in those census records. And certainly over the years, I've had a lot of inconsistency in the way that I've been handling census data. So my scrubbing out project is going to be largely to go back and apply a lot of consistency to the way I handle that data. I was going to show you one other PowerPoint slide, but it's getting a little... I don't like operating off of this touchpad. I prefer a mouse. So there were 3 or 4 observations I made 2.5 years ago that I'd reemphasize. And again, a couple of slight differences from Paul. The census identifies the head of household and then identifies the other people in the household and their relationship to the head of household. Therefore, my suggestion, the way I'm doing it, is when I put in a census tag, I'm only identifying the head of household as the P1, the principal number one, in that census tag. And in most citations, you cite to the census record and the head of household for that census. And so I'm kind of tuning in that direction. And partially I'm leaning towards the fact that roles allows you to still link a person to a census record. So here I have the Julia Hudson, who's the wife, and I have her as a witness. Now, in the new TMG8, they created a lot of new roles for people. And in my rescrub of census records, I'm going to want to go in and first look at the sentences that are generated for these roles and make sure those are the sentences that I want. Because when I start scrubbing, hundreds of people, probably a couple of thousand people, ultimately will be scrubbing the census records. I'll want to go through and based upon the relationship of the person to the head of household, I will want a role that I can assign to that person that is directly lined up with what the census told me about the relationship. And then underlying that will be the sentence that I want to appear about that person should I have a narrative text to confess. So, I'm glad they put in all of these additional roles, and I have used those roles extensively in the last couple of months as I've been documenting a lot of German church records, because those records identify godfather or godmother, and a couple of cases of marriages
there are other witnesses that are identified, and I am putting those people in my database. But the roles capability has been there for quite a few versions of TMG. I thank them for adding a lot of new roles that I would probably end up just using their default text, because those roles are on target for what I want. In this case, Mary and Julia is listed as the wife, not the mother. She's the wife. And so I'll go ahead and select the I got a little problem here with my screen. Some stuff down here at the bottom has gone away. I don't want to lock it. It says auto-hide, it auto-hide. I had this happen to me once before, and there's something about my computer screen. It is a Blu-ray HD TV type screen, and I don't think a lot of programs are dealing with that very successfully. TMG among them. Anyway, I want to put in that role and see here the wife now appears in the census at daytime and all that stuff. The other thing I wanted to illustrate, and I ended up doing this backwards. Right here, this is something I like to do. There is, and I can't make this go away, there is her primary name, Mary Julia, and then I put in quotes Lula, that was her nickname, and apparently everybody called her Lula, Evers. And that was her, Evers was her maiden name. She married a Hudson, but as her primary name, I forced it to be Mary Julia Lula Evers. But if you looked at the actual census record, it just says Julia Hudson. It doesn't say, you know, all of her full name. Certainly doesn't give her maiden name, since her name at the time of the census was Hudson. The other thing I suggest that people do is the default is always going to be to display witness or primary using their primary name. And the primary name, again, is a name that I pick and put that primary flat symbol next to force that as her primary name. And it's going to be the name that will appear on many of her charts. But when you start getting down to texts and to narrative, the truth is Mary Julia Lula Evers did not appear in the census. The name that appeared in the census was Lula Evers. The census taker knew her by her nickname. And so the census record says Lula Evers lived at this location. And so I'm choosing to go through, and where I find names in the census that differ from the primary name, I'm putting that in as a name variation, citing the census is where I got that name variation, if the name variation is different from any other name variation. And then in the witness role or the primary roles, I'm then selecting the name that appeared next to that person in the originating record. Now, when I print out a narrative of Mary Julia Lula Evers, that primary name is going to appear in the heading, or should appear in the heading, unless I do something to override it. But as you go through the narrative, you're going to find that she was baptized Mary Julia Evers, and then later in her life, people started calling her Lula. And then you would find in this census record of whatever date that was, 1900, that Julia Evers was enumerated in the census on a particular date. So it's kind of a way of fine-tuning, using the tools that are available in TMG, to fine-tune the way the data is captured and recorded, and in this case, the way the data is going to be displayed in various reports. I'll give you more examples of this, but it's something where I probably got through about 10%, and then I started seeing the roles was going to be a big change in TMG8. I kind of expected that 2.5 years ago, a year and a half ago, a year ago, and their change really, they did not do any change to the mechanics of roles, but they did add, I think, hundreds of roles to the various tags. And the ones that I've used so far, I'm appreciative that they put them there. I know I had some roles in there, and I haven't gone back and figured out how the new roles affected the old roles that I put in. And, you know, I need to kind of retune some sentence. So, my differences from Paul is I have put in a tag for each census year with the primary purpose of that, so that I could tune up the sentences to say that somebody's enumerated in the 15th census or the 12th census in the United States. But also, when I display in the person view, to me, the tags every 10 years stand out a little bit more. I could have highlighted the tags and, and looked at the date, but that's the way I chose to do it. And then where I'm going through and intent is need to be followed up with action here. Is one of these days, probably in late April, early May, I'm going to just sit down, clear my desk, and have some starting point. And working through my direct ancestors, find them in the census, and then definitely all of the direct ancestors and their children and their spouses, I'm going to try to find in the census. You know, anybody who's a grandparent, I want to find the census data going all the way back. And then probably where I have cousins that I know, I will probably try to bring them down, because some of those are fifth cousins. I may try to bring down those family lines using the census. I'm not going to go find census records for the minister that married several of my ancestors. I did capture that information in part because I was just trying to make associations with religions and things like that. And if I saw a pastor's name and he did three or four marriages, I only know one time that he was the pastor of the Presbyterian Church. I kind of assume he didn't change religions over the next 12 years. And that he, as he did more marriages, that those people were getting married in the Presbyterian Church. So I kind of inferred that. It's kind of some of the points I want to make about census questions.
So you're switching from lumping to splitting?
On the census records, I'm probably mostly switched in the ones I had and the ones that were cleaned up. And again, the reason for that is it's just when it's all said and done, I kind of view those as being an independent piece of data. And I think the lumper splitter, one of the things that's changed, of course, is now we have quad processor with hyper-threading, solid-state memory, computers, USB 3 and SATA 3 ports. So the stuff move in and out of computers a lot faster. I've not put many of my exhibits as internal to PMG. The only internal exhibits I have now are basically thumbnail pictures of people on their site. The rest of it is just because it's external. But I'm just saying, okay, you know, I can browse through 1,000 sources. One of the other keys to doing the lumper splitter thing is kind of people were asking the way Paul was doing the abbreviations. You do have to think about how am I going to find that record a long time from now. And one of the keys of that is making sure that the fields that you may want to search on are available and searchable somewhere in the record description. You can't search on things, you can't find things that aren't listed as searchable fields that can be searched. Other questions?
You persuaded me, John, that taking the style thing with a co-principle is really, it's nice to hear that my confusion because I'm sure all the wives were actually the mothers of the sons and daughters enumerated in the census records.
The census record is not a good source of that.
Sorry?
The census record is not a good source of that. It may be a very valuable clue about the relationship.
And the wife is identified easily as a witness.
Yeah.
So that you can you can move over into her records quite easily anyway. You don't have to make her a co-principal. I was wrong, but I only have 133 places where I have to make the director at most.
I'm doing the same thing as far as putting in a census tag for each year. I use the regular census tag throughout the years when it's a state census. When it comes to divorces, I am doing Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Under TMG version 8, obviously we get this delightful little ability to color your tag. One thing I wanted to show is this, if you open up the tag, different tag types. What I did is I just made all of my census tags the same color. That way they stand out. I know what they are. You know, there's only so many colors that you're going to actually be able to see on your screen. So I haven't done that many. You know, I've got birth and marriage and death and then the census tag. What I have done on some of them is also I created something for candidates, and I haven't done it yet on the census tag, so I've been meaning to do that and add in a census candidate so I can make those different colors. So for example, if you've got like three people of the same name in one area, you don't really want to say that your census because you don't know which is which. I was thinking of adding another tag now that is a candidate census tag for that year, having it be, you know, some garish color. And so it would show up as something that I needed to check. Okay. Unfortunately, I'm in mine here. When it comes to sources, I did both. I started off as a splitter, and then I went to Lumper, but all of my direct ancestors and their immediate family, I've done lumping. I've done splitting. Excuse me. So I've got like. Okay. So, but I sort instead of by name, I always put in an abbreviation of the state. And then the county, and then the name of the person. Okay, so all of my Massachusetts ones will sort together, all of my Maryland ones. And then I did something really peculiar, which is my 1790 census, you'll notice, is source number 1790. And so I get made it really easy to lump because you could just click on the citation and type in 1880, and there it was. And then I just would paste the information from Ancestry in the little enumeration tag. I'm going to show you that if I have to get out of direct ancestors because those are all. If I've got one for him that way. Let's find somebody who is more recent. He's a 31, so he's going to be. I knew that. for somebody that was in there. Okay, let's go here. And I unfortunately do it the other way as far as the wife. I went it. And I probably shouldn't have done this until 1880 and later when it said wife. Okay, so in particular up until 1880, I shouldn't have it as another principal. I should have it as a witness, but I need to go back and work on those. Here, if you look at the source down here, I wish it had made it bigger, but what I did is it's 1870 sentence, and then I put in the name of the head of the household, comma, and then the location of the ward, you know, the city of the ward, the county, the state, page number, and that usually comes right off. And you can get that information and paste it in off of the citation. The later ones have the EDs and everything in them as well, so you get that information. This I do for non-direct, I've been trying to go back and add the splitting for the people who are siblings as well. And I'm going to need to go back and do that because this guy is actually, these colors are my accents for whether or not they're related directly to me. And so these blue people are my direct ancestors. And so he is a sibling of a direct ancestor, and that's his color there. And so all of his should have, under my system, they should have the splitter. Okay, so, but I like went to talk a while when I learned how to do the filters for finding the people in each sentence. And so I like put in ridiculous amounts of sentence stuff, and I just couldn't, there were just too many sources. I mean, I had no trouble filling in all the gaps, but I don't know, however many. You know, if you do them by source number, I've got some ludicrous amount of 2296. But I did a couple filling in the gaps between 1790 and 1880. So, I think it's better to go with the splitting. And it was interesting because when we had that land cruise for TMG, Terry and I were chatting for a while, and he was saying, I think I'm going back to splitting more, because the problem is, in particular, like the second site, if you use the little bibliography at the bottom of each of the pages, and your bibliography just says 1870, that sentence, what good is that? I mean, you need the source detail, and you don't get that if you have a huge lumping that takes you all the way up to the top. Now, there are people who lump in smaller amounts. So they use, like, what would be the role, or they use the county and that kind of stuff in each of the states. But I didn't ever see that since I was getting them off of Ancestry for the most part. You know, if you're using the same role, you know, of microfilm at a place, I can understand why you would do that, but since it's not even coming to you that way anymore, I think you're probably better off with the complete splitting approach and doing a separate one for each. God knows how many I will end up with there. Look at this. I've got 19, 20, that all should be, yes, there you go, 1638. So I have 1638 that use this 1910. That's why when I'm going back to look at those, I'm only going to look at the ones that are siblings. And then maybe if I have any more energy left, I might go past that. But, I did go a little long while. What can I say?
You broke it down a bit more manageably.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's any questions?
I would say that's very scary. If you have a splitter for something, then
get the detail.
It's the people in the that are sort of on the edge, the siblings of the...
The information is still there, though, because if you look back at that one particular chart, I mean, it's still in his...
Right.
You know, so when you go to the source, if you do a report, it's going to come out with that much information about him, and somebody can take that information, and they can go back, and they can find him in that census using that information. Okay? But you need to have the state and the county and the city, the page number. If you've got EDs, you need to get make sure you've got the EDs in there. And as long as you're putting in all of those pieces that you need for the mill so that people can find it, you're okay. But if you don't have enough pieces in there, they can't find it.
Right.
And that's the whole point of sources. I mean, sentences-wise, TMGA had some problems with how it was handling mold. They had an update for 8.1, and it seems to be better. Most of the problems it had with roles, I think, sounded like they were primarily to do with different languages. So if you're using English, you're not in too bad a shape. But one of the things that was happening was when you went in to change a role name, it was like creating another one. And it was really weird, but it sounds like they've got that fixed now in 8.2. But Teresa G. Elliott has already broken 82, and she's gone. Basically, what they found is one of the problems was, let me go up here and show you. I want to check that. Sorry. This is my, I've done the garish candidate tag for my birth candidate, burial candidate, that kind of stuff. So they show up. But here, yeah, what happened is, let me edit this and show you. In the role, what wasn't sticking and stuff, found that it's still not sticking, is if you move these and sort them around, and so that you pick one and you want to move it up because that's the second one you usually use, and the ones you don't use that much are down here. Those moves are not sticking. But otherwise, it sounds like the other problems that they were having with roles are gone. In looking back quickly this week over the email traffic on the list, it sounded like people weren't having, there was an installer problem for a while on TOG 8.2, and they finally got that fixed for most people, and I think a lot of virus programs were interfering with the ability to download it, and so I don't know why this time around that was the case. But, any questions?
Wait a second before we go off. This is, there's a sentence. Yeah, there's a sentence forum on Holy Jean's website and the Holy Jean community, and there's all sorts of interesting sentences in there. Some of them are sentences. Okay. If you think, you know, and I didn't show you the different roles I have, but I've got a bunch of different roles with different information there. These are Teresa G. Elliott role. And she's got, look at this one. Basically, what she's done is write it so that, you know, every possible thing is already in your sentence, and then she just has to pick it from the drop down menu, and that whole thing goes in. So if you. Yeah. I don't know how long it took her to get these straight, but you can see when somebody does that with wrong, that they might be the one to break it.